Starting.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Last session, last day. Hope you had a lot of fun, alcohol, and everything else. We'll try to keep it entertainment and fun. We'll see if it works. I'm Mark Suryski. I'm Group Program Manager for Data Market. And I have Christian here, who will be helping me with the demo gods. And seeing that demos actually work. How many people actually know about Data Market? Something.
Okay, awesome.
Oh, awesome. It's much more than we usually get. So the reason is, there is one slide we always show.
Okay, can I jump in real quick? So if anybody has any questions during the session, please don't wait until the end, but just, maybe raise your hand or something. So we can keep this a little bit interactive and, you don't forget your question, maybe.
Okay. Especially for such small crowd, we should have just brought beers inside and had some fun. So often we have people, developers coming and saying, oh, I have this great idea and I just need this piece of data for it. If you ever try to go and look for this data, it's a pretty cumbersome experience. You have to call people, you have to understand the API. Every company has different API. We just had some example that we did ourselves recently. Let's say I'm interested in writing a small baseball fantasy application. So I'm going to switch to the browser. Actually tried it both on Bing and Google, so it works. MLB Statistics API, and what I see is like lots of people looking for it, and most of them, like, I think it'd be fun to build fantasy, but after a bit of Googling, not being in, I'm getting the impression there is no easy and reasonably priced data, and so on. Basically, and we get asked a lot why Microsoft invests in something like Data Market. Because people go and say, this is content publishing business. We know Thomson Reuters does it, Dun & Bradstreet does it. Why Microsoft does it? What we understand is that ability to find data and use it for your application in a simple and standard way can unleash a lot of applications and innovations. And since this is whole Azure platform, this is really important for us. We actually see people building applications in a matter of days that they couldn't build before. And we are going to showcase how to do that today. We are going to show you the Data Market site itself. And Christian is going to do some extreme coding with some new features that will have a correlation of alpha drop of specific library and not yet released codes on premises that we'll connect to. So just a preview. In any sense, I'll move to the data market, and for people who did not see it yet, this is a 5 months in the market experience called datamarketazure.com, the site, and you can look for data here. So if I'm going to go to look for the same MLB statistics, then I can actually find the StatsPort database with MLB statistics, year-to-date statistics, and a lot of other life scores databases. And it's actually not so pricey if you look for it. And we're working with Stats on even reducing some of the pricing for this. So great, we have a catalog. But, catalog is not exactly what we are looking for. What we are looking for is some kind of abstraction that allows people to access the data in a standard way. So one of the examples we usually showcase is Excel add-in that we created internally. So here's my Excel. Looks familiar to people. Same 2010 Excel. Nothing changed. Now I'm going to Data tab, and I see the Import from Data Market button. I click on it, I sign in with my account key, and I'll show you later what it means. And I see all of my subscriptions in the same pane. And now, if I'm interested in, I don't know, unemployment rate in Sweden, if I have it, no, I don't have it in this one. Okay, let's say I'm interested in crime statistics in Las Vegas. And I get the crime statistics in Las Vegas inside my Excel with, like, you know, one click. And now I'm actually going to look for something else. Let's say I'm interested in the latest news on travel advisory from United Kingdom government. Oops, I need to find another place to do that. And I see all the latest news that United Kingdom travel advisory service generates, like severe weather, travel advice for European football match, and as a user, I did not even feel there is a difference. But this data is stored in different data centers and in different storage capabilities, in SQL Azure and Windows Azure storage, and some of the data is even on-premises. So now we'll go back to the presentation and talk about, so what's Windows Azure Data Market? You just saw the site. It was previously known as Codename Dallas. Some people still come to us and say, you had this nice project, Codename Dallas. What happened to it? So it became Data Market. We currently have 89 data sets. Some are paid and some are free. And we have content coming every couple of weeks. Latest content drop was just yesterday. And quite a few third-party applications already working. If you look at the... give me a second. I need to switch to my phone. If you look at the same travel advisory data I was showing, here's an application that went out by UK government, or sponsored by UK government, where I could go and say if I'm about to go to, I don't know, Angola, what's my embassy contact, and what are the latest news I can get from it. And this application goes directly to Data Market online. There is no, you know, tricks in this one. You'll have some tricks in the next one. So, statistically, we have quite a nice usage for now. We have almost more than 5,000 registered users working in Data Market, and more than 8,000 subscriptions to specific data sets. Actually, when I built it, it was 8,000. Now it's already 8,500, so it's just a matter of last few days. And now, we went through the site already. We'll move to why it works. The whole Data Market infrastructure is built on Windows Azure. We are completely built on Windows Azure. We run on Windows Azure roles. We use SQL Azure as a storage, and we use a Fabric access control system for authentication purposes. And we use only public APIs. So in theory, what we did, any one of you can do today. There is no private APIs, private usage. It's all public Windows Azure and SQL Azure APIs. And in a sense, what Data Market today is, it's two roles. It's a web role for a service, or basically how do you access the data sets that we hide underneath. And the other service is for portal where you can go and buy the data. Completely elastic, all the promises. Yeah, there is a question? No. Okay. All the promises that Windows, Azure, and SQL Azure have in terms of availability, elasticity, everything is basically inside because we don't do any tricks. Always standard. Yeah, keep me honest if I manage. So the other reason, and it's not on this slide, but what we do is we actually allow customers to host data on-premises in SQL Azure or in Windows Azure Tables. We provide connectors that basically abstract the usage from the actual storage from the customer. And on top of it, we run OData, so every data set is accessible through OData.
So the interesting thing here is one key takeaway. This goes a bit into like if you have data and you want to publish data, is that you can take an existing REST-based or SOAP-based service. You can put data in SQL Azure. You can put data in SQL Server. And we, from our infrastructure, can connect to all of these different backend stores. And we have connectors in place that actually are able to transform everything from from that REST or SOAP service into an OData service. So people in the front end, if you're a user, you just use OData. And we do the whole transformation back and forth, and you would never know what's the backend store, which is pretty great because a lot of these APIs, you know, there's always the SOAP, then there's REST, and they're also pretty complicated. Some of them have grown over years, so it's like, you know, all of that stuff that's hard to get into, and with the data market, there's just OData, and you can use it. And that's also why the Excel add-in works so great, because the Excel add-in doesn't need to know about all these different technologies. It just knows about OData and the endpoints, and it's able to query all the data service, data sets we have.
Yep. So now we'll move to the really dangerous parts of showing stuff that was built recently. How many of you actually know about Data.js? Anyone does? Okay, it's a new library that our OData team released. It's actually on Codeplex right now. It's an alpha version that allows to build a OData-like experience for on top of HTML5 features. And one of the issues we had for in-browser experiences for data market so far is the whole cross-domain requests, because due to security cross-domain limitations, it would bring all the pop-ups of do you allow, or sometimes you cannot really even allow the access to the data. The Data.js, and I highly recommend to go and try it, is solving parts of the issues. And right now it's an alpha stage.
You can get it on Codeplex, yeah.
here's the link. And now, Christian, you will show how to work with it.
Yeah, so before I do that. I wanted to ask you guys, a few of you have seen Data Market. Who of you actually built anything for Data Market or against Data Market? Awesome. So before I actually show this Data.js integration, I wanted to take a step back, and this is now out of our script, but I want to show you guys actually how to build a small application for Data Market so that you understand how that works. And then I go a little bit and show you a little bit of the code that we used in the sample for Data.js, but it will be similar. It's just like JavaScript versus C sharp. So let me. That's why I have like Visual Studio up here with no project. And what I do?
Go for it.
I just go for it, right? I create a new project here, and I will create something that you guys are all familiar with.
Any bet how long it takes to write an application that queries crime statistics in Seattle? 1 minute, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 weeks. we'll see it right now, I guess.
So basically what I have to do is I go into the marketplace, I sign in with my live ID. So what we use is a sign in, and it actually does a little bit of funky stuff here. But what I do then is I actually go to the browse page, and the browse contains all the data sets. And I would want to get the crime statistics data set, so I happen to know that it's one of the first ones. So I can sort the marketplace. So I sort it by name, and I see, I knew that it was started with a number, so I knew it would be one of the first ones. So I can open this crime data set, And it's like, you know, as if you go on any like e-commerce site, you can browse stuff, like as if you browse books on Amazon, you browse data sets here, and you can buy data sets here. And what happens if you're not signed in is that you have a sign-up button down here that you click, and then basically you accept the terms of use that come with the data set, and then it is part of your subscribed data set. So I did that already because I use this data set quite a lot, and I have it already subscribed. I can find a lot of interesting things now on this. Once I subscribe to the data set, I find a lot of interesting things on this page, which is, you know, I find like title, description, you know, category, all these standard things, but I also find integrations. Like I can explore the data set here, I can use it in Power Pivot, which is like this in-memory BI solution for Excel that you can download. Then I can use Tableau software, which is a visualization software that allows
me
to...
Don't promote Tableau, just show how you do it.
Yeah, but then I can also learn how to use it in Visual Studio, so that goes to MSTN, and I have a documentation there, and I can use it. But since I know all of that, actually, I want to preview the data first because I like that. So actually, I click on this Explore Dataset, and I get an experience that allows me to, in the browser, preview the data and play with the data. So let's go here and do like, let's search for the state of Washington. So I can actually fill in here. This is like the search area here. I can run the query, and I get the data back. So this was really quick. It's really easy. You know, I get the feeling what's the data all about. So how can I use it? What can I do with it? I can also look at the Atom Pub, which is the OData returns an XML document that I can use and parse. And OData also creates client libraries for me, like a client object model when I use it in Visual Studio. But if I wanted to be like, you know, a hardcore geek and I wanted to parse everything myself, I can do as well. It's really simple. It's an Atom feed. So actually, if you open this in Internet Explorer, it will actually show you the feed reader. So you can actually read it like an RSS or like a blog, you know. But now that's pretty cool, and you know this data set is nice, I want to use it. So go back, and in the bottom I find like, you know, like additional information for the data set. So I find an interactive view where I can actually also go and play a little bit with the data, like this is a visualization that, you know, goes against the data set and puts the results on a map. Now you can see it here. I get sample images that show me, you know, this is a way how I could use this data, like in Excel, or I could build some visualizations or things like that. It also gives me a detail tab. And this is the interesting part for developers, because the detail tab contains the service root UI in the top. So this is the entry point where I get the OData feed that I can use, the OData service. And under there, it contains the exposed entities. OData exposes entities, which is, you know, like tables. And I can see the schema here. So I can actually look at the schema, and I can understand, you know, I can see the different fields that are exposed. The first stuff is, the first table is like the fields I can actually use to input, like if I create a query, I can actually query for these things. And the second table is what I get back. So usually I get a little bit more back than I could query on, but it depends on the data set. So what I do now is I take the service root, the service URL, take that very quick, there you go, and go back to my console application, and what I can do now is I go to this to the references in Visual Studio, and I can add a service reference. So this opens the dialog that you guys might know from WCF services, from SOAP services, where you can actually paste in the URL, and you can click go. What happens now is it goes out to the service, right? It finds all this metadata that's associated with this feed, with this service, right? And it creates an object model for me. So what happened here under the covers is it created the city crime object model. So it actually created an object that is exactly that, and that contains that schema that I showed you before on the website. You can click OK. And I have now Visual Studio does its magic and, you know, gets all the DLLs in place and everything. And now let me make this a little bit bigger. There you go. Now I can actually go and use this this service like I would use any service. So I can say service reference. Container, so this is basically how data works. It's like a context that I use for queries. I create a new one. I have to provide the URI. That is because this is an object model that works against any service. It could be in any space, in any location. I have to tell it now, look, the actual service where you should query against sits here, right? So I do this. Then, as a second line, so this was my first line of code. My second line of code is, you know, I need to provide some credentials. Because let's find this. Because actually, we want to make sure that only the people who have subscribed to the data set can access the data set, because some of them are commercial, so you don't want any random person to access it. So what we did is we locked it down with basic auth, so you can just use basic authentication to get access to the service. We will have something that, you know, extends there a little bit, and like in the next couple of slides. And the network credential class is the class in .NET that encapsulates a username and the password. So that's exactly what basic auth needs. So I can use that here. As a username, you can put anything here, we don't really care. Because what we expose, we ask people, is something called an API key. So we expose an API key that you use. And I get that API key by going back to the website, by going to the top, and to my account. And in my account, I have, you know, my account information, I have my data, this is like the list of all my subscribed data sets that I have. And I have something that's called an account keys. And here I found this API. I find this API key. I just take the API key. I copy it, basically. And this is my live API key, so I can actually get access to all of my services right now. And now I have everything done to authenticate against the service. So I copied this API key, and that's everything I needed. So two lines of code. And now I can start writing a query. So who knows this? What is this? Is that link? So what I can actually do is I can just use link statements against the OData service in my application to query the data. So I can say, you know, okay, I want from city crime, I want where state, let's say, equals Washington, you know, and I also want to, let's say, you know, link always has a from or where to select. I select it, and now I actually, let's say, I want one item in query, and I go, oops, I don't want an app domain. What happens to me? Brightline, let me output the city. So the most work I actually have to do is do this. And I get all the properties here. Look how cool this is. I get all the properties, everything that's exposed in the service, I can just get through through IntelliSense. Select city, and then let's put crime. I can say item.violent crime because I happen to know. Otherwise, I could have found it in the IntelliSense. So read line. Okay, now read, because this goes so quick, I need actually to stop my app after it actually read everything. Okay, so let's start this. So it compiles, and then it goes on the first line, right? Creates the instance, sets the credentials, creates the query. I can actually hover over it. And what I see here, it's a little bit small, but what I get here is actually the actual URL that's going to be executed against the service. It contains everything. I could copy and paste this URL and run it against the service endpoint, and I get the same data back. And now I go, you know, let's loop over this, wait a little bit, and I got the first item back. Let's look into the item. Okay, this is like, you know, all the data here. I get like the city and everything. And I just loop over it, and I got all the data into my little application here. So basically what it took me to do is I had to add the service reference, create the container, set the password, write the link statement. It's like three lines of code, four lines of code. So it's really straightforward to write something against this data market APIs, and all the APIs work the same. But you know, if I look back a little bit about, you know, how much time and, you know, it would have taken me before data market, you know, I get like a CSV file, an Excel file, put in a database, make sure the database is available on the internet because I want to build an application on the internet, need to secure it, you know, do all of this extra work, and then I can actually start building an application on top of it. So now what I focus on is actually where I'm strong at my business logic, and not at all this like administrative task and all this random stuff that I had to do before. So, and now...
And you could do it for any data set. Yeah. Including the same baseball application.
Yeah, I've written on a baseball app here. Same thing. In the same amount of time, right?
We actually promise it's going to be as easy for any data set.
Yeah. And now, let's go into the really interesting part with DataJS, so this data library that we were talking about a while ago. What I did is, like, we built a little, HTML website, and basically what it does, it allows me to query for state, so I select the state, and I can enter a weather station, and it gives me like an average temperatures for that weather station. So I could search for a certain, you know, city or somewhere and say, like, you know, give me the average weather over the last, you know, 10 years or something like that, right? So we have that. It's called WeatherBug. It's a database that is exposed to a service that has, you know, all this weather information, historical weather information that I could use to do interesting analysis on top. And what I did In the bottom here is actually, this is, you know, jQuery. So if you guys use jQuery before, you might notice. It actually says, okay, when this document is loaded, execute this function. And what this function does is actually it executes a query against the OData service. Okay, so this OData.read thing that you see there, this is actually the Data.js library. So what it does is, like, it allows me to easily read OData services. And I have to provide a URI here. So it's not so nice like what you had before. You know, we had the object model and everything. But I need to actually construct the URI manually. And what I did is, like, I go to Weatherbug, and I get, like, you know, I get, like, all the stations back. And it searches for the state that is equal to the state I selected in a dropdown. So I will show you that in a second. And then I have also to provide in the header my authorization code. And I have to use basic auth, like I showed before, and I need to encode it and everything. So this is not so nice, right? This is interesting, but, you know.
I first show it.
Yeah, but, you know. And then once it's done, the Data.js library actually has a second argument that is like the function that you wanted to call when the query is done. And what I do then is actually, I show an autocomplete. And I show, like, you know, somebody can select, you know, one of the stations. And then I import the data. And the import does a second query. What actually goes out does the average, you know, the calculation of the average, and shows it. So if I start this really quick, let me start this. Yes, the slowest part here is my Visual Studio. computer. Okay, so it opens this. And I have now this drop-down where I can select the state. And I can also go and, you know, just start typing. And I get all these weather stations, right? So I got now all these weather stations. This is just a jQuery, you know, IntelliSense kind of thing, you know, autocomplete. I can select one of them. It lets me select one. It goes out to the service again, does the second request. It did, like, this average calculation and everything. It shows it in some progress bars that, you know, is also available in jQuery UI. So this uses mostly jQuery and a little bit, like, two or three lines of this Data.js library, and it abstracts all this, you know, mapping objects back and forth and things away from me. The only thing I need to know is how to construct the URL. And I have also one of the problems I have if I look at the code is, like, okay, so I just want, you know, somebody else can take this from me. And now everybody has my account, which is pretty bad, right? So, but we will address that in a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Okay. But nevertheless, it's HTML5 done pretty easily.
Yeah, a little bit of JavaScript. And
a
everything.
Little bit of JavaScript. You don't even need to write a code. But yeah, I mean, it would be pretty stupid to post this application to the to a real website, because anybody can hit source on your web page and take your account key and access your data. So kind
and
of strange.
And what we told people so far is, always, you know, look, you can build everything in JavaScript, but create a middle tier where you know, secure your account key and only expose, like, you know, services and make sure and that, you know, lock down services, and also make sure that maybe only, like, you know, your website can access this service and lock it down. Try to lock it down as much as you can, but still, it's not too great.
Yeah. So we actually invested quite a bit in starting to build a stack for kind of seamless integration of services with data market, so it becomes not just easy coding, but also an experience where web service or application can, or WinPhone application can just go and easily integrate with data market and do it on behalf of the customer. So if you look at the stack, we started when we released the data market with basically proxy classes and data client libraries integration, because this is what you need for the simple experience of writing the data and making sure that all the data is coming in the same format. Then, as Christian already demoed, you have a service explorer where you can play with the data during design time.
So that is the thing in the browser where I was, like, you know, searching for stuff and filtering it?
Yeah. You can also actually send your users to Service Explorer as well, or show parts of the visual of the Service Explorer in your application to make sure the user can browse the catalog and use their own data. Mm-hmm. We actually have a few vendors that did that. I'm not going to promote these vendors, but
the interesting thing about this is that we have a service exposed as a catalog service that lets you actually go and, you know, fetch all the data sets that a user subscribed to, or also all the data sets that are available in the marketplace. And each of them has, like, that's the thing on the right in the bottom, says like dollar metadata, that is for OData. Each endpoint exposes this document. It's basically a document that describes the data model. It's pretty simple. And that's also, that is exposed on each endpoint, and also Visual Studio uses that to create the object model, basically.
Yeah,
you can use it yourself.
Catalog service is pretty nice. Exceladin is using it. Mm-hmm. We're actually working with the data team on standardizing this as part of a data catalog effort. So you should expect some news on this pretty soon. But right now, it's just a metadata document.
Yep.
And what we are adding right now is the ability to have delegated account access and also to be able to have some embedded catalog and purchase UI inside your application on behalf of the users. We couldn't do that until last week when ACS shipped their new version, ACS V2, which introduced OAuth support. And we will talk a bit about how it's going to work and what you will be required to implement such experience inside your application. Yeah. So if I'm building some kind of software as a service visualization application, I don't really own any data. I just want to have some kind of experience where the user can take his data, give it to me, and I will provide visual reports, right? And it's in many cases we have this kind of requirement.
But imagine this, you know, somebody wants to, you know, you built an application that, you know, shows maybe baseball players or something like that, right? And you want to, like, or like a fantasy football app. You don't want to be the person who owns the access rights to the data, like, as, you know, a developer, because then you have to buy for each user a license. You rather would want some flow where, you know, the user itself, when they sign up for this, the data, for the application, they get actually also an integrated experience where they can buy the required data sets as like kind of like a package thing, right? You buy a package, you buy the software plus the data as one thing. And that's exactly what OAuth 2.0 enables, right? It allows you to do something like that. And this is, Max is going into the flow now.
So in a sense, your user who has an account with DataMark, or maybe not yet, accesses the application, and now you request authentication from the user. The user goes to the data market because what we'll show is how it's done of redirect request to data market and signups or grants access to the application. So then data market basically sends authentication code and then token to the application. Mm-hmm. An application later on can use this token to identify itself with the user who has a data market account.
So who of you guys has seen something like this before? This flow?
It's pretty cool. It's the way Facebook does.
If you use actually an app on Facebook, or if you use Foursquare, and you connect your account with Facebook, what happens is exactly that. They show you a little page that is actually a Facebook page where you actually grant access. You say like, okay, this application, Foursquare, can now access my Facebook account. This is the exact same flow. So this is the same thing where it's like, you know, oh, this application here that somebody built now is allowed to access this data in my service, in my account, in data market. It's the same thing. So users will be familiar with this flow. They understand how it works. And people.
I think we'll actually even show this.
Yeah, right? I think we do.
We'll see. So in a sense, what it allows is to have a seamless integration to access account, no need to cut and paste account key anymore or have some basic authentication. A user can always control the account and data in a sense that user can come to data market and say, please remove the access to this application to my data. Mm-hmm. So they can actually control who can access the data and not just have it transparent. And what it also allows is to extend all kind of data market scenarios, so take like widgets or parts of the graphs or parts of the data and put it inside your application, because right now you can basically do that without any common account key.
And this is also the thing where Max was mentioning that, you know, the user is in control. This is also the same as in Facebook, where actually you can grant an application access and then later you can say, oh, this application, I don't want it anymore, you just remove it.
Yeah.
Done.
So the way it actually works is there is a Windows Identity Framework HTTP model that supports OAuth. It's something that App Fabric Access Control Services shipped a few weeks ago, as I said. You can go and try to start using it even today. So let's say your web application has some kind of client ID that you know. It's your user, you know the guy, person, whoever. And when this person, yes.
Can I say something? I just want to like add something to this. Like, there's, it says up there client ID and secret. So this is actually when you as a developer built an application for Data Market, there is a website where you go on Data Market to register your application. You basically get a unique ID and some token that you can embed in your application so that when actually the whole approve thing happens, that the user says, like, I allow this application, Data Market knows what kind, what application it actually is. So this is like, this is something that you get there. So there's a registration step where you register your application with Data Market, basically.
Okay. We'll actually get to it as well. But the thing is, when you need to get some kind of user consent on providing his credential or her credentials to your application. So it's a pseudocode. The code is a bit more complicated. But in a sense, you need to basically redirect the endpoint to Data Market Azure.com and have a new URI on your site where you can be notified when authentication is finished. Mm-hmm. There is a consent UI flow. We'll demo it in a second. I hope it works. I'll knock. And then post-authentication, there is a authentication code that is being delivered to your application. You need to give it to the OAuth HTTP model. Yeah. And this code is being used to acquire a token. Now, it sounds complicated. It's much less complicated when you implement it. We'll show the code. And surely enough, after you get the token, this token, the whole promise is it's not something that you keep forever. Mm-hmm. Because we want to invalidate this as soon as we can, so it's not being abused by users who write the code of your application. Mm-hmm. So every 10 minutes, the token will be refreshed, mm-hmm. and you will be getting an additional token, which is a refresh token, that mm-hmm. you can use to refresh the token. But mm-hmm. while you receive it, you can actually store this token inside your application storage. Mm-hmm. And every time now you get a request from the same client, you can now add a header that says authorization and add the access token you received from the service. Mm-hmm. And this basically identifies your request as a request of that specific client mm-hmm. who gave you permission mm-hmm. to use his data set.
So basically, one cool thing about these tokens is that, as Max said, they come in pairs. So one is the one that actually lets you get access to the data. The second one is a refresh token. And each of these tokens is self-containing or something, you know. We don't need to, like, everything is encoded in this token that we need to know. And it's also signed in the end, so we don't have to go to the database. We can just, you know, use a module on our side to actually decrypt the thing and look at it and, you know, get the information out there. And after 10 minutes, these tokens expire, and the application has to go and do like a use the refresh token to get, you know, a new token, which means that each 10 minutes, we are checking in our database whether the user still grants the, you know, access to this application. So for 10 minutes window, the application can, you know, is pretty much, you know, can do whatever the application wants to do with the data, but after that, there's always a checkpoint each 10 minutes. This is something that's used also with Facebook and all these other applications. They have the same mechanisms in place, so it's always a short window because otherwise you have to check all the time in the database. Is there, you know, it adds more it's like performance hit, basically. Yeah.
And yeah, we have to be proud about being first Microsoft product that implements this support. Yes. No, this is the ACS part. It was shipped a few weeks ago, so it's accessible. Yeah. You can use it. Yeah. Now, Data Market integration, it's currently internal. It will be out in a month from now, more or less.
Yeah.
So you can use it in Data Market pretty soon. Yeah. So now is the tricky part, demo.
Yep, this is going to be the fun part.
Let's see if it works.
So basically what we have here is I have the kind of same website that I had before. And what I did here is like, you know, if you look, let's go back here really quick. Let's go up a bit. So you remember this line, right, where I actually said, you know, I put my account key in here and, you know, did whole authorization and everything. I changed this line to actually use OAuth and use a data access token. And this token is the thing I get back. And actually what I do is, like, I have a little bit of code in the CS file, in the code behind, that actually takes the token and puts it in a cookie, and I read it back from the cookie each time, you know, the page gets refreshed. That's like a little bit of code that I did, and if you close the browser, the cookie's gone, so it's an in-memory cookie. And basically what you can do in the back is, like, you know, we have in the web config, we have, let me open this here really quick. You register the library that Max was saying as an endpoint, and then it calls back into this endpoint. So actually, you know, when the flow when the whole flow happens, this endpoint on our side is being triggered and contains all the tokens we need. Okay, so that's one thing you need to do. The second thing you need to do is then I also set up the whole library, and this is a little bit more code, but it's going to be pretty well documented. It's always the same kind of thing you need to do. But what I need to do in the bottom, actually in the global ASA, is like I actually set up the library to process these tokens. And there's a bunch of events that I subscribe to. Like there's an event that's called access token received, end user authorization fails, requesting access token, things like that. And in these kind of methods, I do my magic with the cookie. So I basically, in the access token received, if I go in here, where's the thing? Need to go to the method here. In this thing, actually, what I did is like I store the thing in a cookie and actually put it, you know, in the cookie and have it there, okay. And then in my in the code that I wrote, I actually basically thing is I go and each time the page is being opened, I go to the cookie, I get the cookie, and just inject the cookie as JavaScript in my page, like the token itself. So this is really straightforward. I mean, it goes a little bit into the details on how the implementation works here, but like there's a lot of documentation about this, and it's pretty straightforward. There's also a lot of tutorials about how to do this. But basically, the cool thing that's the most important part is that this token that I use here, even if it's in the website, it doesn't matter. Because after 10 minutes, that thing is gone, right? It's really not important. I can actually copy and paste it and send it around in an email. It doesn't really matter. And now,
let's see if it works now.
Yeah, let's see if it works. Otherwise, I have a backup here. This is the website it's the same thing I implemented. Let me see what happened now. Let me just open this again. Really quick. Okay, basically. Let me try something here. Sorry for that. I think the demo god is not nice to me today. Okay, here you go. So basically what happens is now when I open the website, there is something new up here that says, like, you know, before you can actually use this, you need to give consent, right? So actually, the website itself just says, like, you know, I don't have a token right now. I need this token, right? So I click on continue. And now this whole flow that Max was describing starts, where it actually goes and it makes me sign in with my credentials. So I am, as a user, I have already subscribed to this data set. If I hadn't, it would tell me, you know, you need to subscribe to this data set. If I didn't have a live ID, it would tell me, you know, create a live ID and all of that stuff. Yeah. So that's all there.
By the way, you don't need to implement live ID integration in your application. It just
works.
It works for us. So it's for the access to data market.
Yeah, and now I sign in with my account. And what happens is after I signed in, this website shows up. This is the same. This is like the consent flow where you actually grant access to the application. This is really similar to what you see in Facebook and on all these websites. And now if I click allow access. Yes. So, but actually, let me retry this really quick here. What basically happens is we have a little bug in this thing here, which it doesn't encode one of the parameters properly right now. But that's something we need to fix. And actually, you can see in the top, I go against the test environment.
We still have a few weeks to
ship it.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, guys. But DemoGod doesn't let me. Oh, here you go. Oh. So basically what happened once this bug is fixed, since, you know, the only thing we don't do right now is when there's a plus in one of the parameters, which in HTTP means space, we don't encode it properly. So, you know, you get an invalid token and then we throw this error, right? So this is a problem and we need to encode it. That's one thing we missed. And what now happens, I can do the same thing. I can actually search again. I get the Columbia River bar. I wait a little bit. I get the data back. So this is the same. This is the same experience that I had before.
Now shows a source.
Yeah, but now the cool thing is that this is not the application developer's code anymore, but rather, that was quick. We rather injected this JavaScript that I was showing before. This is actually a token. It's quite a long token, but I can copy this. I can show it to you. Everybody, feel welcome to use this one because it doesn't work longer than 10 minutes. And then if I go down here, you know, I just use this token in JavaScript, and that's all it is. So this is much more, you know, straightforward, and, you know, it's more compelling for you, for an developer on top of data market. Okay. That's me.
See you for now. So the interesting pattern we see right now when we bring this data, and we have, as I said, almost 90 or 100 data sets already, it all becomes a question of how people use data and not how people acquire data. Because acquiring data becomes really simple. It's just here, you use the same old data API, you do authentication delegation, you're done. So now it becomes a question of like how smart people are about using the data. And the interesting pattern is that even content providers sometimes don't really know how the data will be used. So in a sense, in many cases, they go to us and say, how do we price the data? Because it depends on, you know, the usage. Here's one example of the same crime statistics. We had somebody who wrote, I'll actually show this, I hope, who wrote a pretty nice Facebook application.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, here are my friends on Facebook, and here's the crime statistics correlation, and probably I wouldn't visit the guy who is in Rochester.
Yeah, basically it shows Max's friends and who is most likely being murdered in the top.
Yeah.
So the guy in the top is not that fortunate.
I guess. Maybe I shouldn't lend any money to this guy as well. But I mean, it's a kind of funny, nice application. Anyone can use it. You're welcome to go to the Facebook and do it on your friends and see who is the most dangerous ones. So it's most adventurous ones, I guess.
It's under apps.facebook.com/crimestats, I guess.
But if I'm to write some kind of real estate application where I'm hunting for some housing data, then crime statistic may become one of the considerations of this application. Should I pick this house or not? Maybe, you know, there is some games going around or something. But if I'm a company that sells security devices, then this is like business critical data for me, because once crime statistics goes up in some region, I'm sending my people there. I'm selling security devices. It's good. So in a sense, what we find is only domain experts or creative people can unleash the full value of data set. We hear really strange things we never heard before, like pharma companies are using unemployment statistics for some of the analytics. When we heard this first time, it was like, why? And they had some explanation on how it correlates with pharma usage. But as I said, we don't know. We just provide the infrastructure for you to consume it, and you can create new ways of doing this. So we'll show a couple of additional applications kind of quickly, I guess, on good examples of how it simplifies the way of using data,
yep,
and leave some time for Q&A because we are running over.
Yeah.
So one application is, as I mentioned, sometimes people go and say, I'm looking for a house. I guess everyone was in this situation before, this way or another. So here's a nice small application we did, and we can actually show the code later as well. But let's say I'm going through some area, I see a sign, there's a nice house, I'm like, oh, I'm interested, but there is a phone number to call, and maybe I'm not that interested. Now, how do I know more about this house? Here's a, you know, locate me. I'm not going to do that because it's a simulator. It's an emulator. It's not going to locate me too much. But let's say I'm interested in this house. So I saw this house. I typed in an address. And now I see, okay, it's actually in Redmond City. It was built in 2003. Here's the lot size statistics. Not enough. I could probably look for something else. Actually, this one doesn't have photos, but some of them do. And I can actually see the photos of the house from outside the house. And I can see the estimate. Is this something I can afford? So I can have this estimate information here. And let's say I'm interested in this area because this seems to be like a nice neighborhood. I can see comparison houses in this neighborhood that have been on the market. So until now, I could probably do that with Zillow, more or less, if I could really understand the API. But if I'm interested in additional things like schools, my kids want to go to school, so where's the school, and how good is the school? And it's not on Zillow. It's some other data set. Actually, I'm interested in the same crime statistics. It's a safe neighborhood. And I see it here as well. You don't find it on Zillow as well. Or how much people spend here. So if the median income here is $120,000, am I the richest person in the neighborhood or the poorest? And how much people spend on the stuff in the neighborhood? And you could add on data more and more, like weather, historic weather, blogs, what people say about this neighborhood, anything you like. It's all a matter of how creative you become. So when we show this application, people usually go with like, yeah, I would buy it now. But then you ask them, okay, what else would you add? And they have all kind of creative ideas of data they would add to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring it to data market. Yeah, and this is the whole idea.
I think most of the services in this app are actually free on the marketplace, so you can just go there and you know, sign up for free and build something like that.
The last one is affordability, is a paid one.
Yeah.
The rest are actually free. So, in terms of code, I'll just, you know, glimpse through the code, but what you have is containers from all of the providers we just enumerated, and those containers without, you know, walking through them, is a code generated by tool exactly the same. It's a proxy classes. So there is no smarts in doing something. It's just proxy classes you use, you query as you query normal library objects, and you get it into your application, and suddenly the application has so much value.
Yeah, you focus on, you know, what you're good at, like creating a cool application and, you know, having data that powers it.
So, and here's another one. What we usually find is the moment the data becomes visual, it becomes even better because people can do a lot of stuff with visual on the data. So, Christian,
yep,
your turn.
So,
yeah, you might have mistyped. You don't have.
I think I don't have internet.
You lost the internet?
Mm-hmm.
We are already closing, we still have 5 minutes.
So what we actually did is like, and let me try to get my internet back real quick. What we did is we worked with a company that's called Component Art. And today the demo gods are not with me.
Oh, let me show it.
Yeah, I put it on your. So what we did is actually we worked with...
not this one.
There you go. So we actually worked with Component Art. They they built components, reusable components for Silverlight. And what they did is they worked with us and they integrated the data market so that you can actually consume data market feeds right within their components. So you can drag and drop a component into a Silverlight application and then connect it directly to the data market. It knows how to consume all data services, knows how to provide the password that you need, the account key, and then you're ready to go. And what they do is like all these visualization components here, and they also built a little dashboard to showcase, you know, what you can use this data for. So basically what you have here is like they used some key global indicators from the United Nations, and it lets you, you know, just get like an information about the different, you know, GDPs and, you know, economies, and you can go around and just like compare stuff. You can also drag, you know, let's take Africa here, for example. You can put it in here and you can actually see how the whole, you know, continent performs. You will see it performs as well as Canada, right? But it's really interesting insights you get as soon as you plot something on a visual control. And getting that information by just looking at the data is pretty hard.
By the way, it's all public. You can browse it yourself. Yeah, there's no hidden keys or anything.
Yeah, it's on azurecomponentart.com. And
show just yet another one and we'll go to Q&A because we have a few minutes.
So one of the cool things here is like this one is the one that I like the most is, you know, there's like they show you the GDP for all these different economies and you see a little chart in the bottom that shows you, you know, like the trending over time. And it's really interesting to see how like everything has like this, it goes down in the last couple of years. Japan has like a rough, it kind of goes a little bit like this, and I don't know how it's now with the earthquake and everything. But if you look at China, it just goes up. So it's really interesting if you look at these kind of information, you know, like whenever you add a little bit of visualization, everybody gets like, you know, this, everybody's able to get insights and, you know, I said the sky's the limit. Think about, you know, how you could actually take the data and build something like that.
Okay, I think we'll stop here and leave some time for questions.
Yeah.
I couldn't see any confirmations or any message on the data market side saying what was specifically being done. So I only saw a page telling the user that was going to happen, but I figured out that was part of your code. Yeah. And then when the person clicks, when the user clicks,
allow, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It goes to data market. So in data market, what's the allow?
Yeah.
So the question actually is like, is there in the flow where it's like, you know, the confirmational page or something that says like it happened, right? So actually this page that you saw, with the allow and decline button, that is data market ready. So we need maybe do a better job in branding it a bit so that people in the top right, you would actually have seen the logo. And that is when it goes out. And also the sign up with the live ID, the sign in, that is also data market. And if I haven't had, like if I didn't have the, I wouldn't have had the subscription, it would also walk me through like purchasing that. Yeah. So that's the whole integrated experience there. And then it comes back into the application. As a user, I can always go back to data market and I go to my account in the top right there was a link. And there I can actually, there's a new tab in there that says application and it has the description of the application, everything, and I can actually just cancel the you know, there I can kill it. Yeah,
we didn't show this because we want some additional surprises when we ship it.
I forgot the last one.
If you remember the first bullet where you had like new URI where to use redirect on authentication complete, this is a callback.
It goes back, yeah. And the interesting part about this is like in this demo it's set up so it will do it each time, like the authentication, but you can actually ask whether, you know, you can store the token and just use it, right? So you don't have to go through this flow all the time, but just for the first time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes?
Can I get some insight before I allow it, what data sets they're going to access and how often?
Yeah. So the data sets it's going to access, that's something that's part of this flow. the number of transactions, that's something we don't have at the moment, but it's good feedback. It's something we should probably add to them. It allows you to estimate how big the cost is going to be. A lot of the data sets we see have also like unlimited subscriptions. So for these, it doesn't matter because you have as many queries as you want. But for the ones where it's locked down, we should show something new.
In general terms, interconnectivity between applications and data sets, it's going to be one of the biggest pillars for us this year. So we are going to have some further announcements a bit later. But there is a lot of investment in this.
Yeah, to make this a great experience. Yes? Okay, so the question was like, is the data being cached? So you meant being in our part of the system, right? So basically, right now we don't cache any of the data. We have the infrastructure to do so if we wanted to, but when we talked to our comp providers, they didn't like the idea for now. And we did performance measurements, and we found that all of these comp providers, I mean, a lot of them have the data in SQL Azure, which is the same data center, so the performance is pretty good. And the other ones who have it hosted themselves, they have already customers using the data sets, so they also guarantee certain uptimes and performance. So we didn't find any, issues with that. We were actually doing quite a bit of measurement, seeing like latency over the internet and things like that, because some of them are not hosted in the same data centers and everything. But we couldn't find any real slowness that was, caused by that.
Yeah, the link to data centers is pretty huge, as you probably heard from Windows Azure folks. So everything we did right now was completely through the cloud, no tricks, nothing in the box, and networking here is not so great in this building, so it was still fast.
Yeah, usually the thing we see is like when the data leaves us and goes to the client, that's where it's slower. But between the data content provider and us, it's really quick. Some of these content providers have also pretty high SLAs, like 5 nines and stuff like that. So it's really interesting to see that we don't need that right now. It might be an investment in the future, saying maybe for some enable it, and you need to also think about freshness of data, right? It's like you would need to have an individual timeout per data set, which we can actually set, but we just have it to zero right now for everybody, so it always goes through. Yes? The question is, is there a way to find out what the quality of the data is?
So in general, we say today that data market is a premium marketplace for data. You cannot go and just publish the data. We ensure the quality. So all of the data today is quality data. Now, and every content provider signs an SLA agreement that says, if there are any issues with my data, I'm going to go and fix it. So the way to know is basically we can tell you it is. But if you have specific question on a specific data set, you can always ask, and we can give you the information of how good it is for your means. As I said, in many senses, what we find is even content providers don't know how the data is really used or will be used. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we get people come and saying, if you just add this field or lat long or something like that, then it will become much more usable for me.
The interesting thing is also that right now, actually, the process of getting into the data market is that you have to you sign an agreement with the data market team that you will guarantee a certain level of uptime and certain quality, basically, and then we will actually handhold you through a process of onboarding the data. So far, we got great data sets online. I mean, there's still always does it really fit me? Is it something I can use? And there's we exposed the schema, we showed the schema. But additional to that, there's also a feedback link there for each comp provider where you can actually directly contact them. And all of them have a support email address or support website where they link you through, and you could get directly in contact with them. So it's that you can actually ask them these questions. A lot of them additional to the service itself on the right side of the data set. It's something I skip. They also have additional documentation, so that links back to their website, where you find exactly what the data sets they have exposed, what they actually contain, what kind of data it is, and things like that, more like descriptive information, which you're probably looking for.
Yeah.
It's just, no, it's no. Actually basically just a subscription to the data set. That's it.
Yeah. If we don't...
Yeah.
We don't charge applications outside of the cost of the subscription, and we don't charge content providers for being in data market. We just take 20% cut from their price. Basically, if they sell you something for $200, we take $40.
And I mean, this is just one model, the OAuth model, right? You could still also do the other one where you as a... I mean, it depends on what how you build the application, right? You could say, okay, the customer is going to buy this package that, you know, comes with the data set and everything with the flow and what have you, and they create the account with Data Market. The second option could also be that you said, I create the account with Data Market and I find ways to monetize so I don't, you know, Yeah, like you could do that, right? Yeah, but with this flow, we try to make it seamless for the users as well. So, and I said it's one of our investment areas right now to make sure we can actually make this as integrated and seamless as possible. And the Excel add-in that he was showing really quickly will also use this flow in the future. It's pretty nice.
You had a question?
Well, I was going to ask about the cost for content providers.
So the question was if there is an update to schema or data, do the content provider need to publish a separate offer? So the answer is yes and yes. If you update only data, we don't care. You can update data all the time. We actually have media feeds that are being updated every couple of minutes. If you update the schema, you have to create a new offering, basically, because you break the application which is using the previous one. And then we have a process of a offer wind down, where the offer goes down as nobody is starting to use it.
Yeah. Like, for example, as a comp provider, you can decide to take an offer down, but as long as somebody's actually using it, well.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. Great.
Okay. Any other last question? Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.